Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
You see, I screwed up. The last time I was at the San Francisco Public Library doing a free event for job seekers and anybody else who's career-minded, I promised the library that I would mention it, and I forgot. So I wanted to make sure that I don't. I'm actually particularly excited about this. First of all, I'm kind of flattered. This is the fourth time they have me back. This is the main library in the San Francisco Civic Center on February 1st. It's a week and a half from now, from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. You can have the great privilege of meeting me in person. I'm trying to pack it not only with some really great career tips for people who could either use a job, need a better job, make more of the current job. I'll do a lot of in-person workovers, but those of you who know me at all know I'm a musician and love music. And I've had a couple of clients who have made something of their music life, and they are, at least one is going to be there, Jeffrey Gibbons, but also maybe hopefully Tom Brigham, who they're going to perform, and I'll play the piano. And so it should be a blend of entertainment and educational learning regarding your career. It's free. That's what I love about it. You know, you can come. You don't have to, I don't care what your station in life economically. You can come. So it's February 1st from 5 p.m. to 7:30. You don't even have to register. Just, put it on your calendar and show up at 5 o'clock. I'd be pleased to meet you. So that's that. Now, the main topic for today is under-the-radar jobs and underrated jobs. And to set the stage, I read a Reuters report that just recently came out. It came out after President Obama, during one of his farewell press conferences, said, "We are proud that we've added more than 15 million new jobs." Well, immediately following that, Reuters came out with a report whose headline was, "Nearly 95% of all new jobs during Obama era were part-time or contract." And they're citing a new study by economists from Harvard and Princeton that indicate that 94% of the 10 million new jobs were temp positions. Female workers, interestingly, suffered most heavily as work in traditionally female fields like education and medicine declined during the era. The research was by economist Lawrence Katz at Harvard, Alan Krueger, who I know is a big liberal, a big advocate of raising the minimum wage. So these are not like some right-wing people, let alone, obviously at Harvard and Princeton, there are very few of those anyway. But in any case, they found that the proportion of workers throughout the U.S. during the Obama era who were working in those temp jobs went up from 10.7% of the total population to 15.8%. That's about a 50% increase in the number of temp and part-time workers. Krueger, who was a former chair of the White House Council of Economics Advisors, said he was surprised by the finding. His quote was, he said, "The disappearance of conventional full-time work has hit every demographic. Workers seeking full-time steady work have lost," end quote. Under Obama, 1 million fewer workers overall are working than before the beginning of the Great Recession, and that is to set the stage. But Marty Nemko's rule, I imagine many people's rules, is you never raise a problem. You try to not raise a problem without proposing solutions. So that is how we set the stage. Yes, it is not, despite the misleading unemployment rate of 4.5% or 4.9%, that doesn't talk about the percentage of the jobs that are part-time, full-time, let alone the discouraged workers. So here are some jobs that I think are under the radar or underrated that I believe are worthy of your attention and are less likely, for example, to be offshored. We all continue to believe that college is a necessary prerequisite to success in anything other than the most entry-level jobs. In fact, the previous show, Philosophy Talk, extolled the value of the higher education, and of course they say the follow your passion thing, which I think is a little simplistic, but let's not go there. In any case, we don't think about colleges as businesses, but they are businesses and they hire recruiters. They may be called admissions counselors, advisors, community outreach people. They got all these lovely little antiseptic nonprofit names for it. But in the end, they want to put butts in seats and get you money. So recruiter is an under, and it's not going away. That job is not going away. And in fact, with ever more criticism of higher ed, they're redoubling their marketing efforts. So, you know, there is a job. If you are a believer in higher education, which so many people are, that might be a great job. And again, university jobs are cool because you get lots of time off. You're working in a pleasant environment. Yes, you're outreach going into the community, but you're also working on a college campus, intellectual stimulation, peaceful, beautiful, all the rest of it. So in a place of social foment, you could have everything you want. So I think that's one of those under the radar, underappreciated, unoffshorable careers, college recruiter. Now I want to talk about one that seems very unsexy. Supply chain manager. Now that is a, people think of that, it used to be in the old days, it was called purchasing manager, and you were simply trying to find who could supply the nuts and bolts or whatever for the company, or, you know, at the lowest price and deliver. But now, frankly, especially because of the Bay Area's focus on things like sustainability, treating workers fairly, supply chain is everything from seeing whether there is slave labor being used to make those Nike sneakers to, yes, for understanding the import tariffs, to getting the right price, to making an efficient chain so that there's just-in-time ordering, not too much inventory. It's a critical part of when you walk into a store or you buy, just bought a new iPhone. When I got that iPhone, that was the product of so many people's in the supply chain, from Foxconn, the manufacturer in China, to the supplier of the parts to Foxconn, to the distribution to the Apple stores and online, and et cetera. And it is a, and this is, again, inventory management. Supply chain is one of the most under-the-radar aspects of work. And so nobody's ever graduated from San Francisco State or let alone Stanford saying, oh, I think I want to go into supply chain. And yet it is an absolutely critical and growing and ever more sophisticated part of the workforce. So there's another under the, and it doesn't pay crap. This is not one of those jobs where they're expecting you to work for $12 an hour, no benefits, we'll give you 24 hours to avoid Obamacare. We are going to, or whatever its replacement's going to be. It is the kind of job that pays really well with a very clearly defined ladder. There are vice presidents of supply chain management. This is not just a low-level entry level. So there's a whole career path. You may start as an assistant to somebody, but there are the specialists, the managers, the directors, the vice presidents. Under the radar, supply chain. There are certificates in supply chain. So if this appeals to you, just Google supply chain management certificate or course. I'm a huge fan, by the way, these days of Udemy.com, among all the rest of them. I'm well aware of the online programs that are at Coursera, which are taught by university, usually well-known professors, or Udacity, which is great for learning coding or whatever. But Udemy, and I do teach a course for them, but I have been so impressed with how rigorous their course development process is and how they break everything down into like 2 to 4 minute little lecture, video lectures. So it's really palatable with quizzes embedded, and they cost $10 or $15, nothing to take these courses. And they're very practical. They're not just computer programming. So the first place I would encourage you to go before you even go to your community college or university extension or whatever, you know, they've got like thousands of courses, but they don't have everything. But I would send you to go to udemy.com, Udemy, and see if you can find an online course there. You know, they do offer certificates of completion. You know, it's a great, great underrated resource. And I don't understand, you know, frankly, I did it. I really, frankly, don't need the money. Give me a microphone. I love it. But I can't understand how the course developers can make much money when you're only getting $10 or $15 per student. But, you know, it's a great boon for you. So go to udemy.com. Okay. Let's let our listeners know you're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. I am offering my best advice about under the radar and underrated careers. And I think this is a great time to invite you to call. I'm going to pepper the show through these, and I also have an essay that's really evil. I want to tease it now. I love this. I was taking this online course. This was from the Great Courses. I felt like there was a big gap in my knowledge about business, like especially finance and the and what really is, goes on in marketing and what really goes on in what is the state of the art. So I took this online course from the Great Courses on management, and there was a section on marketing, and it made me furious. And so I ended up, I couldn't resist. I immediately went and I wrote an essay, which I posted on psychologytoday.com, where I write every day, almost every day, on why I called it Why Marketing is Evil. And certainly marketing is a career that is one of the fastest growing careers. I'm going to read you that essay a little later on because that's a little more abstract. I want to help you now then get your opinion about that. But for now, if you have a career-related problem, don't have a job, want to improve your job, looking for a new career, want to run a business idea by me, I like to think I'm Shark Tank with a heart. Anything that's career-related, even something personally, I have learned over the years, I've had a million clients, that sometimes the thing that keeps you from succeeding in your career is a personal problem. Relationship, drugs, sense of enemy, alienation from the world. Anything that's work-related, directly or indirectly, is fair game for a call. I call them workovers. The phone number here at KELW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another under-the-radar career, and I've talked about now a private sector job in the I've used kind of a nonprofit sector job with universities by talking about college recruiters. I gave a for-profit example in the supply chain manager. And now a government from the government sector, one of the best jobs in my judgment for college graduates to enter into government employment is analyst. Whether it be a management analyst looking at a work group and seeing how well they're doing and how they can be improved, a program analyst who's analyzing innovative programs, wraps around, usually government focuses on the have-nots, so disability programs, minority programs, etc. You analyze and evaluate them, review the literature, or a budget analyst taking a look at cost-effectiveness. Those are great jobs. And those are among the last, like I said at the top, 95% of the new jobs created during the Obama era were part-time and temp. And whereas government employment in general, there's always exceptions, tend to be full-time, benefited, long-term career goal. So don't ignore federal government analyst, management analyst, program analyst, and budget analyst. And now we got plenty of calls on the line. So let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? How can I help you?
Me?
It is.
Hello. Thank you very much. I have enjoyed your show for a long time. And
thank you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. At what point is it ridiculous to say Happy New Year? We're already now the 22nd of January.
I tell you, I am the kind of person, as a matter of fact, this would be a good segue into what I'm going to ask you, as I work at the library, the public library.
Great.
And I do it for the whole month of January, and people love it. But that's just me.
Okay. Well, then, Happy New Year to you, too. I've said this many times on the radio. I love librarians. I love my wife, Barbara Nemko, to death. But if I was single, one of the first things I would do would be go to a librarian convention. I love them. They're helpful. They're intelligent. They're not bombastic. I love librarians.
Well, that is wonderful. I actually am not a librarian.
Oh, okay.
I work. It's kind of a circulation area. Matter of fact, it's a library page job. So here is my question.
Yep.
I've been doing it for a number of years. It's part-time. Matter of fact, most of the jobs in the San Francisco public library system are part-time.
Yeah, most jobs are part these days. And universities are the worst, but let's go, right? I understand.
Okay, wonderful. So my forte is dealing with people. Uh-huh. I have infinite patience. I'm very, very, as a matter of fact, a couple of days ago, our branch manager, we had one of our monthly meetings, oftentimes in the meeting mentions me to the other staff and says, watch how, I deal with people, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
He even jokingly says, when we have a really difficult patron come in, send them to me.
Great, 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 yeah.
So I have received many letters over the years that have been sent to the head of the library, which I've been lucky enough to get copies of, and many of others, which I never got copies of. Just saying what an amazing time, how helpful I was, how incredible, how gracious, how I made their daughter's day or whatever.
Okay.
So I am looking, and choice, because it's generally a civil service job, I'm lucky to be at a branch library where I'm able to a small degree, use my my love and my talents of kind of people interaction, mm-hmm. But to a small degree. Mm-hmm. I need a part-time job, mm-hmm. Maybe another, oh gosh, anywhere between 10, ideally about 15 hours a week.
Okay.
So we'll say between 10 and 20. I've actually had a couple of thoughts, and I want to, it doesn't have to be 40 an hour, but it can't be 15 an hour, if you will.
Okay.
A couple of thoughts I had, but I don't really know how to make it happen. And what do you think of it? Mm-hmm. Unless you have other ideas. I know there are a lot of people who, for one reason or another, are housebound, be it some sort of infirmity,
of
be it age.
Yeah.
And in the past, actually, over the years, I've had little odd jobs, generally through someone I know, doing things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And what really worked out about it, I did something for an older woman once, very cool woman. She had been an artist. And what she really loved about me was not only did I come over and chat and make a little meal and do a few things, but she said I wasn't kind of like, I didn't just treat her like one of the
I'm going to interrupt you. I got it.
Talk with her about art and different interesting things, and that's kind of my forte. When I help someone, I kind of treat them as a whole person.
Okay,
you
I'm going to stop. I see exactly where you're going. The key thing there, if you wanted to go that route, is to avoid the agencies. The agencies will will charge the customer 25 to 40 or 50 an hour, but pay you 16 to 20, and that's a little low for you. So
yes, as a matter of fact, I posted something on Craigslist, and that was my title, and I got actually one job out of it. He hired me a few times, and my title was Skip Tax Task Rabbit. And then in my blurb, I kind of, you know, did a little blurb, and I mentioned that. So that I do know. I want to go direct.
Right. And so the way I would go direct, because this is the kind of thing that is such an intimate, personal, trusted thing. If without people go through the age, older people, for example, or their children, you know, go through an agency because they believe they're vetted. Nobody's going to hire you as a stranger doing that. You've got to do this organically. You've got to make a list of the 20 people you know who like you the best and say that you do this kind of work, and here is the range of things. You know, not just make a little meal and chat with them. That isn't particularly $30 an hour work. You've got to look at what else you can do. Are you somebody who's really good at arguing with the insurance company to get, you know, to get covered, or doing the paperwork, or balancing their checkbook, or, you know,
or walking their dog?
Whatever. Right. Well, look at what you can do that's not $10, because again, walking the dog tends to be $15 an hour work. I'm inviting you to think about what you could do that is not $15 an hour work. Negotiating, arguing with the insurance company is not $15 an hour work. So think about the things that you do. You don't have to have 10 things, but think about some things other than the low pay work, like, you know, I can make you a meal or I can walk the dog, that you could do, and then contact your 20 people and say, I like being a personal assistant, including the older people. Here are some of the things I can do in addition to the basics. That's going to be a way of getting you some $30, and you say that you want $30 an hour or even $35 an hour.
Sure. I mean, to tell you the truth, I'd be fine with $25 an hour.
Okay.
You know, obviously $30 or $35 would be better.
Fine, but that's what I would do. I would be, you know, you can say I'm, you know, between $25 and $35 an hour, depending upon the position. You could say, obviously, if the person is in bed and has got bed sores, has got to be turned over, and it's physically exhausting and whatever, you might be willing to do it, but you'd probably want a little more money. So you can have a range. I do like the idea of being fully opening, disclosing, and saying $25 to $35 an hour, depending upon the nature of the position, so they see what you're looking for, and so you're not there not yanking your chain for a $15 an hour job. Does that make sense?
Now, do you have any other job? That was just one thought
sure.
that crossed my mind. Do you have any for someone who's fantastic with people? And I have lots of, I would have could have lots of letters and
Okay.
Work
I got
and
it.
Personal
I got
backups.
It.
People.
I got it. So
any other thoughts?
Yeah, the most common job is customer service. So is there something, either a nonprofit or for-profit, where you deep, or even a government agency, I mean, people who work for Social Security or the DMV or whatever, they are constantly dealing with irate people. And a customer service person is calming. Somebody who's even a front-facing person, somebody who's looking to get on welfare checks or whatever, or unemployment insurance. Had you thought about trying to get a part-time, maybe on a fill-in basis, because you don't need full-time, which is music to their ears, a job either doing customer service by phone or working for a government agency or a company in customer service? Could you say you're infinitely patient? How about that?
You know, how do I go about? I have thought of that. And when I'm kind of generally either like Google customer service, I can't seem to, they all do seem more in the $15 an hour range.
Right. Again, I'm a big fan of being more focused. Is there an entity, for or nonprofit, that you would particularly, either because you have expertise, let's say you've been a frequent flyer your whole life and you know everything about getting airline tickets and whatever, being a customer service rep for an airline would be appropriate. If you're somebody who lives and breathes the Democratic Party, you know, maybe the Democratic Party, I'm sure as people who are, you know, sitting in the office, the California Democratic Party has got people answering the phones, dealing with an irate customer, that Republican did this, and that, whatever. Is there either a for or nonprofit entity or government entity where you just kind of truly believe in their mission and therefore and have expertise that would make them say, this is not a $15 an hour person, this is a $25 an hour person?
To tell you the truth, not. And what I mean by that is, although I would consider myself a well-rounded person, both in what I can do and intellectually and conversationally, I wouldn't say in the way that you mean. I really can't focus on that. As far as who I would work for, I suppose I would. My heart might be more in, something that I believed in politically, as opposed to maybe, you know, a company that sells jujubes or whatever. You know,
right, jujubes. Yeah, you're showing your age here. I remember those from my childhood. In any case, then, you know, if you're
actually,
not,
you know, I've never actually had a jujube. I've only heard
they're
word.
Disgusting.
I'm not sure what they are.
They're these like these gelatinous, colored, gooky, crappy. You know, sometimes I think they were originally little dots, and then they shaped them in little animals. They're disgusting. Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm 44. Did they have? So that's my age.
Okay.
If that matters.
You're young. That's young these days. So what you might want to do then is, if you're not particularly have a particular expertise in an area, but could do customer service, then go where there's most demand. People are all kinds of problems with their phones, with their mm-hmm. phone service, with Comcast. You know, mm-hmm. the cable provider. They always need people to handle calls. So, you know, if you're not, you know, that might be a place to start. And it's not intrinsically
okay.
sexy. And so it's very, you know, they don't have such an easy time recruiting. And if you've got that calm personality, that might be your way to get $25 an hour.
God, and how do you go? I mean, would I just go to the company?
I would go to Comcast.com, Apple.com, and look on their websites. And they always have a career section. And look for customer service, customer support. They do these clever little phrases, you know, customer satisfaction specialist or custom delight specialist or crap like that. But just look at all the job listings, and if you're open to phone work, so, you know, these days, again, they don't want to give you a space in their office, and it's cheaper to have you work at home. And then you know, with the traffic getting ever worse and no new freeways getting built, working at home is a blessing. So you don't have to face that ridiculous, you know, blood pressure raising commute. So you know, there may well be, you know, tele-support positions. So anyway, those are my thoughts. I want to take more calls. Thank
those
you,
Aaron. Great ideas. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Mr. Nemko. Thank you so much for all of your excellent work.
Thank
Huge
you.
Huge fan. I am a postdoctoral mm-hmm. clinical psychologist mm-hmm. on track for licensure.
Yep.
I completed a formal postdoc, mm-hmm. but it turns out that you can put in 1,500 hours and they can say, you know, we're only going to sign off on 750 of them.
Jesus. Wow.
Yeah.
What happened?
So,
what really happened? Why didn't they give you full credit for your 1,500 hours?
I kind of don't. That's off in the weeds. I'm happy to follow through with you on that, but I just want to stay focused right now on the good and the positive, the next and the new, which is, you know, I've been getting a lot of interest in my resume, and I've gone on a lot of really successful interviews, but what I'm really holding out for is a job that will provide clinical supervision so that I can complete my hours. And it looks like really the best place for that, maybe the only place for that in Northern California, is probably Kaiser Permanente.
Right. I was thinking exactly the same thing before you said the word Kaiser. Absolutely.
Okay. So help not just me out, but I'm sure a lot of your listeners are job seekers.
Okay.
I made it through the first telephone interview with the recruiter. He referred me to the director of the program that he thinks I'm most
best suited for.
Suitable for. Thank you. And I had a good telephone interview with her, and now I have an in-person interview with her and another member of her team. What is the one thing that I need to emphasize about myself to land this gig?
Well, you need to always put yourself in the shoes of the employer. And if I think, when I think about Kaiser and their mental health services, what I think is brief cognitive therapy. They're not here to give you 20 sessions. They're here to give you 3, 5, 7 sessions, whatever. And probably they also want somebody who's your go-to person in a specialty. So if you are a goddess of eating disorders or a goddess of clinical depression, you know, or bipolar or something, you need to both show your commitment to brief cognitive therapy, in my judgment, and not to, you know, I'm sure you may have learned a lot about object relations and, you know, and all the neo-Freudian theories and all the rest of that crap. That's not, you know, Kaiser's extremely evidence-based, and they're not going to be very impressed with that because the evidence base for childhood-rooted psychotherapy is very poor and certainly is very long, time-consuming. So it's showing your knowledge of and commitment to one or more flavors of cognitive behavioral therapy, whether it's REBT or there's many more recent flavors of it, and having a content niche that's a specialization, whether it be, you know, these days there we are, you know, we the issue du jour is transgender. So if you have expertise in transgender or women's issues or interracial, that's huge. So there's, you know, a lot of, you know, interracial tension around those issues and can cause all kinds of problems. So showing or anger, you know, anger management, if you can show concrete expertise in a niche which you demonstrate with examples of anecdotes of work you've done with people in the past, because anecdote is compelling. To me, that combination of showing expertise and knowledge in the broad area of cognitive behavioral therapy and brief therapy in general, de-emphasizing the longer-term neo-Freudian or whatever theories, and having an area of expertise that you can stay claim to and give through examples, I think is your best shot if you, you know, in, obviously I can talk for hours about what it takes to succeed in an interview, but when you said the one thing, that's my three things I think are most key. What in what I just said is relevant or not relevant to you?
But one final question.
No, what was your what was relevant or not relevant, what I just said to you?
Oh, that was great. I'm already formulating an anecdote about a very high-maintenance person that I worked with who struggled with both gender identity and substance abuse.
Right. Oh, yeah, substance abuse is huge. See, there's a good example. If you can talk about substance abuse, that is a major cause of mental illness, much more so. And with the legalization of marijuana, with the medical research being absolutely clear that regular marijuana use, especially vaping, increases the likelihood of mental disturbance, not just a motivational syndrome. If you can speak to being able to work well with drug abuse people, that's going to be a huge plus.
Yeah, that's a focus of this program. So, is there anything that is, how am I going to screw this up? What is the one thing that I will say that will sink me with these
talking
people?
Too much. When you're a counselor especially, you need to follow the traffic light rule. which is that during the first 30 seconds of an utterance, your light is green. They're listening, they're thinking, you're reasonably concise, you're not overwhelming them with information. During the second 30 seconds of an utterance, your light is yellow. They may be thinking, well, she shut up already, she's probably going to be a crappy counselor because she's a big talker. And at the 60-second mark, you better shut up or ask a question. I think that's another key way that you can screw things up by talking too much.
Thank you so much for that, because that is my weakness. That is the area that I know I need to be aware. And that little formula is, I'm going to take that.
Golden. Now, most people don't when they're long-winded, they are not time conscious and they don't realize how long they're talking. I would urge you to take a timer on your phone or a kitchen timer or whatever, and you practice. You keep that timer in front of you and you see the seconds ticking off. And so when it gets to 30, you say, oh my God, it's already 30 seconds. That will get you to learn what 30 seconds feels like. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I've got a few days to practice this.
There you go. All right. Well, I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Take care. Bye. Okay. I'm going to give out the phone number again. No, I should take another call. Let me take another call, yeah? Okay. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
My name is Bill Teplow. I've been a geothermal exploration geologist for the last 35 years. And I've recently started at age 69, a new career as a charter boat captain.
Uh-huh.
I have a Coast Guard license for taking out six people.
Yeah.
And a 35-foot sailboat docked in Emeryville.
Okay.
And I've been booking through a booking agency, which is basically an Airbnb of charter boats.
Yeah.
And I did okay this summer, averaging maybe one to two charters a week. And the reviews are 100% five-star to date.
Yelp, you like Yelp review? Are you having them post on Yelp?
I haven't followed, no.
Go there, because that's where everybody's shopping these days. Everybody, whether it's a restaurant or it's a practitioner, everybody Yelps everybody and everything. If you know, I don't know what the rules are about Yelp, but you certainly can say, you know, we're proud of our reviews on Yelp. That I don't think you're allowed to ask people to write a review on Yelp. But if you say if somewhere or in your brochures or in your handouts or whatever, we're proud of our reviews on Yelp, it subtly triggers in their mind that, well, if I'm happy, I should write a review on Yelp. That will help you get clients in itself. Continue.
Okay, I would like to build my business up to a level of maybe two or three charters a week. In other words, double my double my workload. And I've been following you for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We live a Marty Nemco life, buy 10-year-old Toyota Corollas. And I've been living in the same house with the same mortgage, for the last 30 years.
But you have a little white cute doggy like Einstein. That's key to the Nemco life.
So I appreciate your input here, and I will go after this Yelp. But what else can you suggest for growing my new business for an old man?
I think small organizations like to take people out on adventures. They're team building, bonding things. So whether they be small companies or small nonprofits, people trying to get them to charter your entire boat. You six people. I understand you can't go to a large organization, but contacting small nonprofits, maybe those you're already a member of, or organizations you believe in, and say, how would you like to have a really interesting, instead of the usual outdoor adventure, we're going to go hiking or we're going to go to a retreat center or whatever, how would you like to spend a day on the ocean or in the bay? And I think that may be ways, if you make as part of your life that you're going to spend an hour or two every week making phone calls or emails or whatever to the person who's the head of either the small company, like a small plumbing company. Like when I think of fishing and I think of boats, I think of, kind of mainstream, middle of the road, kind of blue-collarish, non-coastal, middle of the America people. So if you could think of organizations that might not some cutting-edge, high-tech company, but somebody who maybe has a traditional industry, whether it be, as I said, plumbing or electrician, small electrical company has got 10 or 20 employees, And because fishing tends to be more male-centric, an organization that is blue-collar like that, there are more male plumbers. So those kind of organizations might...
I'm gonna have to interrupt you here, Marty. This is the first time I've ever disagreed with you.
Okay.
But almost all my clientele to date are techies from the peninsula.
Great. Thank you. I love to be corrected. I love it. Great. You know,
this is primarily a sailing adventure, not a fishing adventure. So,
okay.
And you know, blue collar and sailing, they don't mix.
Okay,
it's
got it. You've taught me.
Demographic.
I am absolutely so. Therefore, one of the oldest rules of business is dance with the one that brung you. If what's been getting you businesses is tech companies, then find or get a mailing list of all the small tech companies that exist, or maybe and go back to the customers you've already had in that space and ask them if they know of, because if you're working for one small company south of market that's in a high tech company, they know others. So you might do that. You might also do a presentation at, they may be little meetings or meetups or whatever for people who are in those small companies. Maybe posting, there's an idea. You can post a free ad for a meetup, and the meetup could be going on your boat, and maybe it's $50 a person or whatever. I think you can certainly post that, and you're going to get a lot of exposure that way. What do you think?
Yes, I think that kind of outreach would be valuable.
Great. Well, I really love that you do. I love disagreement. I love learning. I wish that we in America right now, we are so polarized. We all insist that we're right. We're always right. We don't want to hear the other side. You taught me something, and therefore, you are an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco workforce. I want to thank you very much for the call, and I wish you happy sailing, as they say.
Okay. Look for a request, perhaps, for an hour or two of your time that I will hire you and take you out so you can see what a sailing adventure on San Francisco Bay looks like, and you might come up with a bunch of other ideas.
You, stranger things could happen. That sounds like a lot. I'll wait till the weather is a little warmer and maybe the rain breaks.
Good idea.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you, Marty.
Yeah, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. This is a kind of a back-to-basic standard show in which I offer careers that are under the radar, underrated, and most importantly, I try to serve you one at a time with what I call a workover. If you or someone you love is struggling with work, either financially, it's the meaning of life, you hate your boss, you hate anything that is any source of unhappiness, that's what I'm here about. I'm trying to turn lemons into lemonade. The phone number here for I used to call them 3-minute workovers, but they're so variable. Sometimes they're 3 minutes, sometimes they're 10. What counts is that I help you. So just give a call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I think I want to offer one or two more these underrated or under-the-radar careers. And then I have this this essay on marketing. I call it Marketing is Evil, that I want to read to you and get your reactions to. So, okay. Another, what I think is a cool job, and I'm thinking about my wife here because I know she's likely to be calling in a while after I read this essay, because she's going to hate this essay, because she's a little bit more of a spender than I am. The previous caller got it exactly right. My previous Prius had 300,000. I bought it new, got to put 300,000 miles on it, and guess what I did? After 300,000 miles, I got another Prius, the same darn color, a new one. The new Priuses are fabulous, and I'm getting 55 miles a gallon, but I digress. Okay. My wife is the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, and so I've learned a lot about jobs in both education administration at the K-12 level. We normally think of, if you're not a teacher, you're going to be a principal, or you're going to be a superintendent. But something I have learned from being married to her is that the education bureaucracy at the district level, at the county level, at the regional level, and the state level, and at the federal level, is mammoth. The education bureaucracy is bizarrely large. But people don't think about those jobs, and they're great. Because, you know, 50% of all teachers leave the field, the profession, within the first 5 years. It can be a burnout. There's so much challenge with very challenging, diverse classes. I don't mean ethnically diverse. I mean newcomers and native speakers of English, gifted and special ed kids all in the same class. It's a burnout profession, trying to teach that Common Core filled with arcana. And so that's a burnout job. But working as an administrator in education in one of those under-the-radar fields, again, nobody ever thinks, oh, when I graduate college, I want to work as an administrator in the county office of education or this SELPA. SELPA is a special ed district. They have all these special ed districts. All of those are great jobs. They are full-time, most of them, full-time benefited positions that pay well. And so that is another under-the-radar job. And one more before I leave this and go to my essay. One thing we know is that there is demand for English as a second language teachers. Everybody thinks about English. You know, I'm going to be a teacher, so I'm going to be a teacher of English, math, science, social studies, foreign language, even PE. But we have such a diverse population, and the birth rates among immigrants, forgetting about the immigration rate, there's a controversy about how whether it's growing or they're going back to their own countries. But there certainly is no question we have a large number of immigrants for whom English is not their first language, and we have a mandate in this country legally. We are to educate them, and whether it be through bilingual education or ESL. So focusing on getting that English as a second language teaching credential should be for the many people who would like to teach but aren't like science and math people, because there are some jobs in science and math and in special ed. But I think that English as a second language is perhaps the most likely route to becoming well-employed in 2017 and beyond, especially here in California. So ESL teacher. Okay, enough of that. Now, here is this essay. As I said, I love to learn, and I'm also, it's driven by fear. I'm always afraid that I don't know enough. So, for example, I felt like my LinkedIn knowledge was only moderate. So I took a course on Udemy recently on an advanced course in how to be an expert at LinkedIn, so to help my clients use LinkedIn to the optimal value. I also feel like I have not had enough experience in business to really understand business well enough, and so many of my clients are, frankly, directors, vice presidents, and even presidents of companies. And I felt like I needed to have a better knowledge of all the different niches in business, the ins and outs, not just the basics, whether it be marketing, supply chain, finance, management, everything. Well, so I took this course. It's through the Great Courses, greatcourses.com, an online course taught by leading professors in each of those areas. And when I got to the marketing one, I found myself repulsed. I was in the car. I listened to this thing on my phone. You know, it's in my tied to my Bluetooth, and I'm listening to this course, and I'm finding myself so annoyed at how disgusting marketing is that even as I was driving, in violation of all laws, I took out, I have a little memo pad, and I started making notes about how much I hated it and hated the whole field of marketing. And when I got home, I couldn't help but run to the computer and write an essay called "Marketing is Evil." And I then posted it on Psychology Today. But then what I did was I said, okay, I must be biased. I don't know enough about marketing or whatever. So I sent a copy of the essay to the heads of the marketing department at Harvard, at Wharton, which is the nation's most prestigious business school, Stanford and Berkeley, in addition to leading marketing professors who were famous, like Jonah Berger at Wharton. I got only 3 responses. All were, nice idea, interesting essay. I don't have time to debate you on the topic. I wanted them to come debate me. I got 5 no responses and 3, gee, nice idea, good essay. Here's a little suggestion, but I can't do it, sorry. So I wanted to have a debate, but I can't. So what I thought I would do is make you either my debate opponent, or maybe you'll agree with me, or amplify, or whatever. All that's fair game. But here is the essay, which I call "Marketing is Evil." It's about 7 minutes long, but I decided that it's worthy of your time, and then we'll spend the rest of the show getting your reactions to it. Okay. Yes, sometimes marketing is a worthy activity. For example, marketing people can help a company develop a more useful product. Also, marketing can help potential customers learn about a new product that's worth considering. But more often, marketing attempts to manipulate you into spending on something that, if you considered all the relevant factors, you wouldn't spend on. And that is dangerous. For example, buying products you wouldn't have bought is money you would have saved, spent on wiser purchases, invested, or donated to charity. As dangerous, buying something suboptimal based on marketing's having identified and played on your hot buttons diverts you from considering all the key factors. Think, for example, about those ads with a sexy woman draped over a car, when in fact that brand breaks down more and costs more. Marketing is heavily used to make people buy more expensive products that in fact perform worse or certainly no better. For example, Cartier watches, Liberty Mutual Insurance, T. Rowe Price investments, and yes, luxury cars. That imposes a significant detriment to a person's financial security. Also, it can help cause people to choose a less pleasant job to buy stuff that actually is worse, like those heavily advertised Mercedes's, BMWs, Jaguars. Those cars require more frequent and more expensive trips to the shop for maintenance, and they break down more than, for example, the much less expensive, as I've been describing, Toyota, Honda, and Subaru. Lest you think I'm focusing too much on cars, a University of Tennessee study found that mutual funds that advertised had worse subsequent performance than those that didn't. Unless a company has a clearly superior... By the way, I have links to all... You know, in the published article, I have links to the data supporting every one of these things. So if you're interested in seeing the studies around any of this, I'm always happy to email you those studies. My email address is mnemco, that's M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, E-M as in Mary, K-O, at comcast.net. Feel free to always email me if you want to see documentation for any research I ever cite. Unless a company has a clearly superior product, the firm's advertising tends to avoid the product's substance and instead creates an image, sizzle, not steak. So, for example, marketing converts commodity products into branded ones, thereby increasing the price dramatically with little or no improvement in quality. For example, generic aspirin costs less than a penny per pill, and I have a link to that, while the pharmacologically identical, equally FDA-approved Bayer aspirin costs 700% more. And at the risk of being personal, too personal, I bought Athlete's Foot cream yesterday. The name brand, Lotrimin, is $10. The generic version with the exact same active ingredient at a dollar store was, not surprising, a dollar for 40% more product. That's 1,500% higher for the brand name. And I've used it before and it works just fine. Marketing uses a wealth of other tactics to manipulate you. For example, celebrity endorsements. For instance, Hillary Clinton's campaign paid performers who were popular among swing voters. As if Lady Gaga needed more money, well, the Hillary Clinton campaign paid them for, quote, event fees. And Katy Perry paid her. She needs a lot of money too, right? And Tony Bennett all got checks. Does such marketing help us choose a better president? And companies use celebrity endorsements to cover up poor value or a product that's inferior to the competition. For example, T-Mobile paid Catherine Zeta-Jones $20 million to push that second-tier carrier. Angelina Jolie, supposed advocate for the people, didn't turn down $30 million to flack the absurdly priced Louis Vuitton products. Another activist, Beyonce, took $50 million to flog sugar-loaded Pepsi, which hurts the health of the very people she insists she cares so much about. 50 Cent took $80 million from Reebok, and LeBron James took $90 million, and David Beckham $160 million to convince people to spend $100 to $200 on brand-name sneakers when you can be as good an athlete with no-name athletic shoes at Walmart or Target for under $20. The vulnerable, disproportionately the poor, indirectly are paying these stars millions and adding to corporate coffers to get products that are a little better and maybe worse than products that don't incorporate a fortune in marketing dollars into their price. Indeed, advertisers focus efforts on those least likely to make thoughtful buying decisions. That's why they use, for example, the Budweiser Frog, the Geico Gecko, and the Taco Bell Chihuahua. Similarly, companies prey on innocent children with ads to get kids to, for example, eat sugary, artificially flavored, artificially colored cereals. Apart from children's products, just walk the supermarket aisles. The expensive processed foods are more likely to be in bright-colored packaging. No coincidence. Sometimes, Items are priced high merely to create the impression of superiority. For example, I recall a not very selective college, I believe it was Bennington, deliberately pricing itself to be the nation's most expensive because it felt it would give the college cachet. Another marketing ploy designed to get people to part with more money without getting commensurate value is to offer three products of a specific type, two of which they don't expect people to buy: a cheap but clearly inferior one, an expensive one, and a wildly expensive one. That makes consumers feel they're being wise in choosing the middle one, even though it offers worse value per dollar than its juxtaposition implies. The funeral industry has used this ploy to prey on people at one of life's most vulnerable times. They show the bereaved a $500 casket painted an ugly color. They show them a casket at $5,000 and one at $10,000. So they feel they're being prudent in spending $5,000 for the middle one, a casket that probably cost the funeral home a few hundred bucks. How much can it cost to make a casket? And who needs a $5,000 box to rot? Branding gives marketers yet more ways to distract the consumer from buying rationally. The product's name, its logo, its slogan, its packaging designs, and its sponsorships. Branding is designed to create an irrational memory structure for broad brush liking a company's products apart from merit. That's something I learned from the course I took. For example, Harley-Davidson versus more reliable motorcycles such as Honda. Worse, Harley's very carefully cultivated image induces people who already have a car to spend an extra 10 or 20 grand to increase their danger of dying. Motorcycles have far greater deaths per mile than cars do. Showing similar disregard for people's health, marketing focuses heavily on liquor and tobacco, and now pot. Cigarettes are the most heavily advertised product in the U.S. The tobacco companies spend $4 billion a year, or $11 million a day, to try to get people to smoke cancer sticks. Living in Napa, I've paid particular attention to the wine industry. It lives on marketing because in blind tests, even expert ratings diverge wildly from each other. In one study, world-class wine experts blind-tasted two wines. As usual, the ratings were all over the map, but what was amazing was that the two bottles were the same wine. Wikipedia lists a variety of such studies. I'm also amused, but not surprised, that in Consumer Reports, Trader Joe's Charles Shaw, that is Two-Buck Chuck, both white and red, were top-rated above much more expensive wines. Marketing is about getting you to spend 5, 10, even 50 times more for a bottle of wine than Two-Buck Chuck. By the way, before I forget, what does this have to do with career? Everything. Marketing has been shown to be one of the fastest-growing careers. And yes, I'm trying to disabuse you from entering the career of marketing. Marketers will even unleash their manipulations on sick people. Drug companies in 2015 spent a record $5.2 billion on marketing, passed along to us to get us to ask our doctor to prescribe on-patent drugs that are less proven and much more expensive than out-of-patent generic drugs. Of course, part of marketing is sales. Armies of salespeople are paid good salaries and given extensive training on tactics to get people to buy more. Nonprofits aren't immune from using marketing tactics. Fundraisers receive extensive training on the art and science of extracting maximum dollars from people. And nonprofits use children and animals to suck out the dollars. For example, we've all seen commercials using bald children with cancer, Africans with pleading eyes, and forlorn animals in the pound facing extermination. That does an excellent job of distracting us from questions that would lead us to wisely allocate our charity dollars. For example, what percentage of donations go to the program versus administration? Would donating to your charity yield more benefit than if I gave to charity that third-party evaluations deemed to yield more benefit per dollar? None of the above asserts that marketers are using out-and-out deception. Alas, they too often do. In a Time magazine article, I listed all the deceptions in the commercials during a mere 1 hour on CNN, which is a station that attracts consumers that are above average in sophistication. Commercials and ads that attract a less sophisticated audience are likely even worse, although that's difficult to imagine. In short, yes, a company trying to develop a more useful product or has a new such product needs to market it, and those are good activities. But most marketing impedes rational decision-making and, in turn, makes the world worse. Or in other words, most marketing is evil. We have a few minutes left. anybody who has got an opinion on this essay, am I saying that most marketing is evil? I welcome your calls now. 415-841-4134 is here. The number at Work with Marty, I'm going KLW, 415-841-4134. We've got calls on the line already. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's your reaction? Hello?
Oh, am
Hi.
I on the air?
You are.
Okay, great. Unfortunately, I don't have a opinion about your marketing piece. I just had a question as a hiring manager doing interviews. So can I ask you that question?
Yeah, I'll try to give you a quick answer so we can have some time for the marketing, but I promise listeners
okay.
I do that. Go ahead.
Just very quickly, if I'm doing a phone interview mm-hmm. and not Skype, but just
mm-hmm.
phone,
mm-hmm.
Is there anything I should know in terms of approaching that differently
yes.
than an in-person interview as the hiring manager?
Yeah, you want to make sure, first of all, you know, some people are so good at being prepped for these phone interviews and some are not. So you want to make it an equalizer. You want to choose the best candidate, not the person who's been coached the most. So you want to send all phone candidates a list of five things you should do to sound your best at the interview. That's a great equalizer. The other thing is, as always, in all interviews, you want to focus not so much on the facts. You want to give them some simulation questions. You want to take a difficult but common task that they would have to do on the job and say, how would you respond in this situation? You also want to ask them about something that they've done in the past, that take one of their accomplishments from their resume and probe it deeply. Say, tell me more about what you did. You said you saved the company $9 zillion for doing whatever. Tell me more about exactly what you did, and keep probing. Very often, if it's real, they'll tell you all this great detail, which will help you understand that person's great. And if not, you'll see that it's kind of resume BS. Anyway, that's my short answer. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What is your reaction to my essay called Marketing is Evil?
Well, Marty, I have to say, I'm sorry to say that we've heard all this before, and a lot of it from you, and you've encapsulated in this essay, but the evils of marketing have to do with the consumer capitalism that we live every day, and that's not going away.
Right. That's fair enough, and so I want to take another call. I got your point. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's your perspective? Not there. Let's go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air.
Hey, okay. Speaking of anecdotes, do you know who the first ever Madison Avenue marketing executive was?
No.
Sigmund Freud's brother.
Really?
Yeah.
That would make sense. He would have they are masters. I mean, I remember when President Obama first got elected, who did he use to run his – he created a 29-member marketing machine. Who did he use? The leading advertising people who have expert advice on how to psychographically manipulate people. Okay. Yes, I'm not surprised. Let me take one more call. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
That was her one point. I didn't – I'll give her one more call. We're out of time. One quickie.
Most important, if you don't need it, it ain't a good deal.
There you go. Excellent point. Thank you very much. I wanted to take as many quick calls as I could. Thank you. Oh, and again, I'll be at the San Francisco Public Library for free February 1st, 5 to 7:30, with a couple of my clients telling their stories and even doing music. It should be entertaining and fun. San Francisco Public Library, Main Branch, San Francisco Civic Center, February 1st, 5 to 7:30 p.m., from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I'll do workovers on callers and more cool yet realistic careers. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.